Welcome into another daily editorial here on the KE Report. I am chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. And Mark, there's a lot for us to recap just this week in terms of data and news that does have some market implications. Even though some of the news from this week didn't aggressively move markets, it is important to note. We're going to start off with the Fed meeting and statement. So the Fed did cut rates, but a lot of people are calling it a hawkish rate cut. Really, when you take a step back, though, what the Fed did really fell in line with what expectations were, and that was a rate cut going on pause, saying that they're data dependent, truly being also market dependent. So what was your general takeaway from what the Fed said and now what the forward guidance is?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think the Federal Reserve delivered what was exactly what was expected. To me, evidence of that is that the January 2020 Fed Funds Futures contract settled basically unchanged on the week. And for me, I'm looking out, what does this mean for 2020? I think this is the next big issue, is where is that bar for the next move from the Fed? And the Fed, I think, is essentially saying that if the economy deteriorates further, it's prepared to ease policy. And I think we need to see that. It's going to take a couple months, I think, for that to materialize. But the market is pricing in, you know, at the market's pricing in a greater chance of a rate cut next year than they were before this week. So when everything's said and done between the Fed statement, the rate cut, and the jobs data, the market's saying they still think that there's a very good chance of at least one rate cut next year. I'm penciling in two, and I think they've got to be front-loaded ahead of the elections, but the market's pricing in at least a solid one cut next year.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And you know, you're not alone in thinking that the Fed will be cutting next year. And in all fairness, Powell didn't take that off the table during his press conference. What about the comments, though, that Powell made regarding rate cuts and how they take time to work their way through the system? And the reason why they started cutting rates was because inflation, they saw that dropping below its target. Inflation has been fairly stable in the U.S., but it's not quite as high as the Fed would want. Can you break down these two aspects, one being inflation and the other being the type of lag that these rate cuts have until they finally do impact some of the economic data?
Yeah, oftentimes I think economists talk about these unpredictable lag and lead times between the adjusting the price of money and having that thing transmitted throughout the entire economy. But I think that the inflation is another way of thinking about the insurance policy that the Fed has. And that is, as long as inflation is below target and not accelerating, the Federal Reserve can keep rates low or lower to try to help extend what already is a record-long recovery. And that's the surprising thing, really, with relatively tight labor markets, long expansion. Now, we've been able to go through this expansion, really, without inflation getting much above the Fed's target.
Yeah, so true. Like I said, inflation has more or less been stuck, or not just in the U.S., but around the world. Let's also look at some GDP numbers. The U.S. had some GDP numbers come out, and they did slightly beat estimates. But still, when you recap where GDP numbers have been in the last couple of years, we are in a general downtrend. The GDP growth rate in 2017, 2.8%. In 2018, 2.5%. And the recent reading is 2.3%. So a general downtrend, but it was still at least a beat of the expectations. What was your takeaway from the GDP number in the U.S.?
Yeah, I think a couple things to keep in mind. One is, when we think about GDP, we have to keep in mind what's the speed of the economy. What should the economy be growing? And the Fed's we get this from the Fed's dot plots when they forecast the long-term growth of the economy. And they usually have that a little bit below 2%. And so I would say that the U.S. economy is still growing around trend, and I would look for it to slow down further as we get into next year. And that what continues to drive it is consumption. What drives consumption is income, and that's why the jobs data is important, because of course, employment is a key way people get their income in which they can consume. But we're also seeing some other signs where consumers are also making ends meet increasingly with revolving credit. And I've been noting that revolving credit, like especially the large companies, the delinquency rate is on the rise. And so to me, these are still late cycle type of economic phenomenon. And that's what concerns me, is that we're getting this like lull, where you're right, the economy has slowed down, but it's just growing the trend. There's not a lot of excess, as people think, to tip us over. And that's what concerns me, a little sort of maybe too complacent.
Well, what is also noteworthy, too, is that the U.S., their data is still generally better than pretty much everywhere around the world. So that is something to always consider, even though we are seeing a slight decrease in the economic data. You brought up the jobs data. The jobs data actually came in quite well today, or this week. It beat estimates, and even today it beat estimates again, which is important because really the consumer has been the one holding up the U.S. economy. And everyone was expecting more or less a disappointment because of the auto workers' strike, the GM strike. What do you think? What was your takeaway from the jobs data that we saw this week?
And I think that you're right, that jobs data was fairly resilient. It shows the labor's market remains fairly resilient. I think that we still are, like you sort of pointed out with the GDP, that these economic, what's going on in economic pivot, they, you know, we have to think about how things change. They either change in like a bump or a grind. A bump is a sharp move. A grind would be a slow move. And I think that's what's happening to the labor market as well as the economy, where I look at a 12-month moving average of non-farm payrolls to get a sense of the underlying trend, really smooth out the noise. And that typically peaks in the middle of the cycle, and it peaked about 3 years ago. So I think that the job growth is slowing, but it's still robust enough to help support income and prevent maybe a recession. So I'm still anticipating slower growth going forward.
Okay, yeah, push that recession back a little bit if the consumer can stay relatively healthy. Let's step outside of the U.S., though, because we did get some European GDP numbers, and I think even more importantly, we are seeing some of the international markets break to some highs. Maybe not all-time highs, but at least 52-week highs, or highs for the year. Combine these two together. Is there a little bit of a risk-on attitude entering the global markets?
You know, it seems to be, you know, a few weeks ago we were commenting about how some people are afraid of a repeat of the fourth quarter of last year, which, as you remember, the stock market got hit pretty hard. And I think that pendulum of sentiment, and this is what just amazes me as an observer as well as an investor, is that how hard that pendulum swings in both directions. And so it swung really hard toward the pessimistic, and now it's swinging pretty hard to more optimistic sort of scenario, connecting a bunch of dots like South Korea, Japanese industrial production in September, better than expected. A big drop in South Korea semiconductor inventory, which is seen to be a sign of a maybe greater price stability. Maybe some production comes back. We've seen stronger Japanese retail sales ahead of the tax increase. In Europe, we saw the Eurozone report better than expected GDP figures for Q3. The economy grew 0.2% instead of 0.1%. Italy revised up their GDP numbers. And then, of course, we had the U.S. employment data. And people are connecting a lot of these dots and saying that maybe we have this synchronized recovery off of a soft patch. And that just helps fuel, I think, the kind of moves we're seeing, like rising stock markets. What I really like, we were talking about before, was this gap in the S&P 500 on November 1st. And that's an important gap where there's no price action. On Friday, the jobs data, we opened up higher than we traded in October. And this gap then appears on a monthly bar chart, which has an extra technical significance. But we're seeing rallies in global equity markets and a backing up of bond yields. And the other thing I'd say we're seeing is that the dollar is softening, especially against those currencies that are sort of levered for growth, Aussie, Kiwi, the Scandinavian currencies. The Canadian dollar is lagging a little bit because the Bank of Canada seems to be moving out of step with this scenario and made room for greater room to maneuver, say, around this neutrality. And so I think that they moved the opposite direction, and the Canadian dollar is the only major currency not to have gained against the dollar at the end of October, early November.
That's pretty interesting because the Bank of Canada did pause. They didn't cut rates during their meeting this week, and they're not really predicting any rate cuts. So, I don't know, some interesting moves in the currency markets. But when we take all this, it almost seems like calm or slightly better data around the world. Is there a possibility in your eyes that this is the calm before the storm, maybe? That everyone gets a little complacent thinking that data is getting better, and then all of a sudden we start getting some surprises to the downside and people start panicking in a sense?
Well, it does concern me that we have, as I look ahead to the calendar, for what we have in the first full week in November, and besides the Bank of England and the Reserve Bank of Australia meeting, neither bank is going to change policy. We really don't get any kind of data that people are not going to look past for this sort of more rosy scenario. But as we get closer to the middle of the month and later, I get more concerned because a couple of things I think can happen. One is we'll find some issues with the U.S. and China trade that it's ready for it to be signed off on. Secondly, U.S. President Trump has until, I believe, around the middle of the month to make a decision about tariffs on auto imports, because the report that found that these were a risk to U.S. national security was released 6 months ago, back in May. And so the president has 6 months to decide. That deadline's coming up. I'm concerned about the stability of the German government. And then I think we've got these just huge budget deficits that we're still trying to finance, stressing the repo market in the U.S. still a bit. So we've got all these factors. But I think next week, the week ahead, the first full week of November, I think is a week that we get sort of continuation of existing trends, pushing the edge on the equity markets, maybe backing up yields a little bit, and keeping those risk-on currencies firm.
Okay, so I guess one other comment being that even though we're seeing some of the risk on markets and currencies firm and even breaking higher, we're also not seeing the safe havens or the risk-off assets break down significantly. They've gone through a little bit of a correction, but when you take into account the impressive moves that these risk-off assets have had just this year, there is still this underlying uneasiness. It seems like money isn't just going indiscriminately into risk on, they are balancing it out, still having some sort of a protective position as well.
Yes, exactly. I think that people are cautious. I think a lot of people have scar tissues. I think a lot of people are hesitant about chasing this money, even though this does seem to be a lot of money on the sidelines.
All right, Mark, great chatting with you. Always a pleasure recapping some of the data and even looking ahead. But I think it's very important to take a step back, take a big picture look at all of this data and understand what the short-term and long-term trends are, because that is what drives markets and also drives a lot of central bank policy expectations. Mark, it's great chatting with you. Everyone, I'm going to post a link below to Mark's daily blog. I highly recommend checking that website out on a daily basis. That's what I do. It's a great recap of some of the key data that we get day after day. Mark, thanks for your time. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Doc. Good luck to everybody.